So there was quite some questions about mindfulness this afternoon in the group that I met. And I think it's really quite important to have a bit of an understanding, conceptual understanding, meaning good thoughts about mindfulness before we can actually apply it. So this is what I'm going to talk about tonight. And I'd like to begin with a story that comes from the Zen tradition. There's one day a villager that made his way up to the mountain, because up at the mountain there was a very wise old sage. And the villager had a very important question for this sage. He said, "Please tell me the principles to reach wisdom and liberation, inner liberation." And so he says, "Please, sir, I'm very insistent." He really wanted to know. And the wise old sage takes his brush, because he was in silence, and he writes the word attention, which you've been doing all day. And so the villager waits, and he thinks there's going to be something else. And he says, "But there isn't anything else?" And the wise old man writes again another word, and that's the same word, attention. And so the villager doesn't get it. He says, "But what's so special about attention?" And the wise old man writes a third time the word attention. So now what do you think the villager did? Well, he went back down the mountain, not understanding maybe that the quality of attention is really one that will conduce and bring us to this inner freedom that we are seeking. So he's wanting more. And maybe you're in that same situation tonight. Because we've been saying mindfulness all day, be present, be here now, it's all ready here. And of course we want more. We have doubts. We have confusion. We really have a sense that maybe it's not enough. And I think until we really truly experience this quality of attention, we will have these questions. So hopefully this wise old man had a very Zen-like attitude and teaching. In the Vipassana world, we try to explain a little more, which is not bad. I remember my very first encounter was with the Zen teaching, and it was just fantastic when I was coming to a retreat just like you did yesterday, and I was waiting for some instructions. And the instructions that were given to me is sit and breathe. And do you know when I met the teacher the next time without receiving any Dharma talk? Just sit and breathe. 3 days later. So that really is great, because it just helps you be with frustration, doubt, confusion, sleepiness, and all the torments of the mind that you might have had today. And notice something very special is that if you're really attentive, all of these states that have emerged will pass, right? The sleepiness didn't last. The frustration didn't last. None of them last. And probably you've had more than one mind state today, right? And you notice that if you really stay present, you're allowing yourself to meet the truth of what is. Everything arises and everything passes. And awareness can know that. And that is exactly the teaching that will lead to the deepest truth, the truth of freedom. But I will say a little more. So this quality of mindfulness is very special. And I will quote Bhikkhu Bodhi, who is a great scholar. He's the one who translated all the big sutras, the majjhimas, as we call them. And also different nikayas. They're really the ancient text of the Buddha. And his definition of mindfulness is this one. Mindfulness in Pali, which is the language closest to the one that the Buddha spoke, is sati. And it means, the word sati derives from a root meaning, which is to remember. Right? But as a mental factor, meaning as a quality in the mind, it's not to remember the past, but it signifies presence of mind, meaning attentiveness to the present. And that is exactly what we are cultivating moment after moment. So it's not a faculty of memory which regards the past. And often when we speak of remembering, of course, we have the very clear way of understanding that it refers to the past. And here it's to remember to be present. So again and again, if you forget what mindfulness means, it means remembering to be present, to be present, to be present. So its function, once you are present, is an absence of confusion. An absence of confusion doesn't mean that that we forget what's here. It's just non-forgetfulness. That's the exact word of not forgetting to be present, to be in life, to be aware, to be alive, actually. And its characteristic, if you want, is to not be floaty. So there's a real sense of contact, right? There's connection, true connection, meaning that even at times it's characterized by the awareness that is so close to the object, whatever it is that is it's present to, that it is kind of like a rubbing to the object. So there's a real sense of connection. And we have used, Charles and I usually use the word intimacy, right? Because there is a need for closeness or proximity of relationship. This is why very clearly when we're in ordinary life, we're kind of disconnected, actually. Right? We're very floaty, meaning that this attention is quite scattered, right? Dispersed. It's kind of, as a yogi was telling me the other day, it feels like, wow, mindfulness is so different than my normal way of being where I am everywhere and nowhere at the same time. And so this is exactly, I like that description, because it's often exactly what we're kind of feeling, is that there is such a way that we can do now, you know, multitasking, like we're everywhere and yet landing nowhere. And so it's exactly the opposite quality of being where you are connecting, right? So the practice invites us to this quality, and it's very helpful to know that it needs a training. It's not a given. This is why we are in this very situation, right? We need to train the mind to be able to do that. And the past is a memory. The future is the unknown, even though we try to anticipate and to really grasp to make things a certain way because we don't like the unknown. Yet, in the truth, the future is the unknown. So now is the knowing. And this quality of mindfulness will always relate to here and now. Here and now. This present moment. So it's a present moment awareness which is constantly linked to the present moment, one moment at a time. So it's very important, and in a very simple way, when we have a 45-minute sitting, for example, which at times we do when we're here, right? We probably have the intention to be present for 45 minutes. That's much too long. It's anticipating into not only the next moment, but into 45 minutes. You don't have them. Where are they, those 45 minutes? It's just this moment, this breath, this sound. And that's doable. See, so it's quite extraordinarily important to really notice that it's about this in-breath, this out-breath, if you've chosen the ground of presence with the anchor of breath, or this sensation, this thought. Then the practice really becomes much more accessible, okay? And yet, is it complicated to be right here, right now, with what is presenting itself? It turns out that it is, for many of us. It's pretty complicated. Why? Because of two reasons. One is the busyness. We have become so activated, right, in our lives. We're so in the doing mode that we lose touch with our own being. So it is a habit of ours, and it's quite helpful to notice that for each one of us, it will require some sense of letting go of that busyness. So the first thing, of course, is that, you know, here, in relationship to our ordinary life, we're not given a lot to do, specifically for that reason, to be able to tune in to that quality of being. Then the second reason why it's not so easy is because of the reactivity. So on one side, there's the busyness, doing, 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 and we're getting so agitated, and in a day, you know, we can't get enough of it. What can I put in that day? Well, more and more and more. And here, it's just like, ooh, crazy mind. And the monkey mind is still kind of being in this mode of doing. And what happens then is you sit and you notice all of the reactivity. That's why it's really not so easy to just be with a breath, with a sound, because it reacts. There is a sense that it's still on a spinning mode. And there is also, amidst the chaos, this definite way that we've all seen for ourselves that we want something else. It's a conducive habit, kind of a constriction and a reactive mode to want another experience than the one that it's showing up. And so that's the reactivity. And of course, we'll begin to include those modes of reactivity, of spinning into busyness or wanting something else in our meditation slowly, including everything. And yet amidst the chaos, which you might have sensed today, there are moments where suddenly there's a glimpse of that potential of connection. A glimpse. It can be a drop in the ocean. And yet there's a moment there of momentary experience, which is not reactive, which is not busy, but just a very simple connection. And that is mindfulness. So don't look for something more complicated. This is the way. It really is moving into simplicity, the uncomplicated mind, the uncomplicated attitude. You can never be simple enough. Please remember. It's too simple. No. If it feels simple, it's the right track. Okay? And it's fascinating because, you know, the Buddha went through this whole period, long period, where he stopped eating, he went into ascetism, he didn't sleep, and it was extreme, right? He went really through a lot of striving, you can say, forcing and through will. He lost his energy, right? And he remembered, as he was really striving and losing some of his energy, he remembered of a moment, and it's quite a beautiful passage in the teachings, where he remembers a moment when he's a child and he's under a tree. In those days, probably people were living under trees, you know, not many other ways. And he remembered that moment where there was a sense of connection, which was leading to a very great quality of inner peace. And he remembered of his attitude of great simplicity in that moment. And he talks about finding the secret of meditation, remembering that one quality that he had lost, which means it's this quality of relaxation that we've been talking about today. That's it's in the receptivity, in the being mode, in the contact of true reality with whatever it is that is manifesting, that he found the way to this foundation of purity of heart, of maybe some sense of connection, totality of being. Not through the struggling. When he stopped struggling, there was this moment of truth that emerged. So this is a very clear indication, and it's a great teaching. Now, of course, we need to hear this, but it's not so obvious, right, to not do. So we are going to have to live in the same way that he did. We are going to have to live a process where every one of us is going to struggle in one way or another to try to get it. Even though there's nothing to get, there is a way that we are going to try to strive for it. And that's part of the process. Why? Because we use our habit modes. And we notice amongst the habit modes, this awareness which come forth. And there's a moment when you say, okay, it's not this way. So it's not about trying to force or get rid of the thoughts or get rid of the sleepiness, but we will try to get rid. And there's a moment often I find because you're exhausted of trying, you let go. And in that moment of letting go, whoop, something totally different comes in the realm of experience. And here again, this is it. Wow. It's quite spacious. It's uncomplicated. It really is simple. And it feels complete. Totality. There's just the stopping of the striving and the struggling and the wanting something else or the pushing away what is unpleasant. That's what it is. There's there, in that moment, a quality of mindfulness. So we meditate to rediscover this natural being. And it's quite amazing that we need to meditate for that. But we do. Until it really becomes much more natural. And we understand that we can live from a place where there's a greater sense of ease, of well-being, and mostly a way that we don't need to escape all the time. This is freeing. When we begin to understand that the way that we escape from ourselves, because it's not running away from life. It's running away from ourself, from our true being. That is the suffering, the cause for great pain. And we can rediscover through a quality of contact, which is a contact which is true, which allows, which really rediscovers our sense of being at home, whatever the experience. Then we find ourselves in a place, a center, a being, which can allow for life to come in and to change. And that's huge. That's what we yearn for, actually. All of us. We may have different words for it. Yet this is exactly what we're looking for. This freedom is about coming home to our being. And yet most of us are, as humans, lost, right? What are we lost in? Usually, we're lost in the world of thoughts, as Charles talked about last night, this dream state, this lost in the stories in our minds. And also, I find, lost in knowing so much that we don't know anything at all anymore. And that's quite extraordinary. Because we know so much that we can't see clearly. And the term vipassana means seeing clearly. It means seeing through the confusion, seeing through all the stories that we tell ourselves about what's not okay, or what life should look like, or what's imperfect, or how we want to be perfect. So whatever the story, you know, this is quite personal, actually. We all have our little story, right, that we make up, our own little creation, right? And yet, it comes down that as a human being, this story is very much what creates the struggle. And so the mindfulness, the quality of seeing clearly, seeing deeply, it says, is seeing through the story, to really allow ourselves to have that sense of intimacy and connection, to even notice, okay, what does the story say? What are the thoughts? And it's so amazing, because I'm sure we've all had the first insight today. And insight means wisdom, right? And that first insight is quite extraordinary. I remember my first time was, wow, so many thoughts in this mind of mine, which I had not really realized before asking myself, you know, to be aware. And that is an insight, because rather than living in the story, we begin to have an awareness of this mind-making of ours. And clearly have a way that we begin to learn progressively how we can deal with the stories and not be completely governed by them. That they are not the authority. There's a choice. And we begin to have a sense that when we meditate, we truly have greater spaciousness because there is a choice. To let ourselves run our life with the stories we create and make, or present moment reality. And what I was noticing, which was quite painful to really live, I remember it so well that it was poignant. I remember crying, actually, when I realized that a lot of the stories that were in my and this being, where one drama after a drama and another drama and another drama, I thought, wow, this is really making hard life. It's making a hard life. The great thing about that is that it really helped me wish, aspire, a wholesome aspiration to look more closely, to really bring in the practice and to be more and more aware, to notice very clearly when I was going away, the loop, whoop, and to notice that there was another possibility, another potential, to be alive, to be awake, and to mostly learn what can lead to a greater sense of peace. Because I think that every one of us here would like some more peace. And peace is not calm. And that's so interesting, you know? Peace here means being awake. And so the Buddha, the term Buddha, means to be awake. And when another person met him as he was just awakened and crossed his road, and he sees the Buddha and he's struck by the clarity, the really quite beautiful, radiant look that he had. And this guy asks him if he's a wizard, if he's a magician, if he's someone from another land, another planet. And the Buddha says no to all of these statements. And he says, I'm simply awake. I have awakened. Awaken from the trance, awaken from the dream state. And this is the invitation to wake up, to really have a quality of wakefulness. So meditation is of two kinds. There's one side where we cultivate tranquility, which is samatha, and the other side is insight. Right? And there's no doubt that these two connect. They intermingle. Okay? So there's one aspect where there's tranquility, and that is a way that we can say that we have used the anchor to, in a way, tranquilize the mind, meaning that we are steadying the awareness. So it's not about the anchor. It's not about the object of the breath or sound, if you use sound. It's about steadying the mindfulness, meaning steadying the quality of awareness. And then insight, or what we call vipassana, seeks to develop the understanding, seeing through the confusion, and clearly understanding the nature of all of life. Inner life and outer life. And that's called wisdom. So in a way, these two aspects create the foundation for our practice. And I think they come together, right? It's tranquility that gives the collectedness. So there's a real sense of intimacy, landing, arriving, being in contact, right? Not scattered or distracted. That's kind of the first ability, connect. And then as we settle the attention, we see into the reality, the way things are, right? So the nature of a sensation, the nature of a sound. And that's very helpful. So this is the intimacy. And in that intimacy, we get to know life, ourselves, the nature of this mind and body, very, very deeply. Not superficially. It really is not superficial. It's deep. And it says that insight is intuitive understanding. It's depth that we are revealing. So, as I said to a person this afternoon, it really is important that we don't mistaken the practice. It's not about creating a perfect state. You know, and it's so important to hear this because again and again we think that we should reach a state, right? And once we've reached that state, which is, of course, a moment maybe of tranquility or just absence of thought, and wow, it's so amazing, we're going to try to recreate that state. And any quality of mind, any mind state, any experience has the same value as that state which you have maybe tasted today. This person was clear. And so I said to this person, but any experience can offer that same taste. So it's important to understand that with Vipassana practice, all of the experiences have the same value. Can you hear it? Meaning that the tiredness or the impatience or the irritation or the calm, the joy have the same value. You're going to say, I don't think so. Right? There's no doubt that I prefer calm and joy to irritation and frustration, right? But in relationship to the meditation, they have the same value because they have the value to liberate the mind from grasping, from pain. And actually, I had a teacher who said that the difficult experiences have even a better quality of waking us up because they're painful. So we really want to wake up. Exactly like in my story when I realized how much pain I was creating in my mind with my thoughts. There's kind of a urgency to wake up. Rather than with calm, you try and indulge in calm. It's so nice. It's so pleasant, right? So there's maybe less of a sense of being aware. So it's quite important to realize that all experiences have the same value, right? One teacher said this, meditation practice involves an intimate relationship with ourselves. Great intimacy is involved. It has nothing to do with achieving perfection, achieving some absolute state or other. It is purely getting into who we already are, really allowing ourselves to meet our actual experience, whatever that experience is. So there's a lot of potential with this. It's amazing that we don't need to have a specific state to be able to meditate. Right? Of course, there are experiences you like better than others. Well, this is part of the journey, and you will just notice it and work with it and begin to have a sense where, oh, okay, I prefer this one to that one. Normal. But you don't attach. That's what happens. So we come out of living in a dream world and connect through the senses. So it's not escapism. There's no way that we escape. It really is to come into our senses and experience reality as it is, a breath, a sound, a thought, a taste of rice, just fully being in contact with whatever it is that is our life. It's amazing. And why is it so special? Because we're fully here in the totality of our being instead of being completely scattered. Without needing to leave anything behind. So there's a great sense of liberation in that mode. Can you imagine just how freeing it is that we don't need to achieve or get something else to be in peace? And one mistake that we often do is that we think we need to control. And it's exactly that quality of control that prevents us from fully living. We control usually to be safe. But that safety is a very clear conditional safety. Why? Because things change. So this is why there is a way that rather than trying to grasp at what we have to feel safe, to have a sense of so-called protection, we can begin to open and let ourselves feel what it is that is just present and feel a greater sense of protection when we are allowing life in rather than closing down on life. And there's a real sense of movement from being closed, really rigid, contracted in our bodies, and maybe very clearly contracted with our opinions, as Charles was saying last night, and enabling this process to be known. And as we know it, there's an openness, there's a freedom and realization that it doesn't need to be so. And therefore life is much more manageable. We can welcome in, we can allow. Now, this is not a nice thought. It can happen through thinking. It has to be a living experience. And this is why we're here. This is exactly why we're in this situation. Very special situation. Why we're in silence. Why we're really trying to connect more deeply with what is happening in this mind, in this body, in this heart of ours, and of course in relationship to the outside world, sensory world, but sensing and feeling rather than thinking. It cannot happen through ideas, concepts. It can only happen through the living experience. And so we begin to sense that we don't need to get rid of anything, and we don't need to promote anything. The very meeting in each moment is the way to that quality of allowing, of presence, of openness, and not grasping. And it's quite beautiful. So it's not superficial. It's called at times bare attention. Meaning bare, what does it mean? It means bare of judgment. And one of the very clear definition is that it's non-judgmental attention. So much of the time, there's judgment in our mind. This is good. This is not good. She looks nice. She doesn't look nice. Right? I like the way I am. I don't like the way I am. This is a good opinion. This is not a good opinion. This ongoing evaluation, comparing good and bad, like, don't like, is such a burden, and it's just such a habit that we don't even notice it. It's so such a way of living into it. And when we become aware of it, it's, wow, it's just judging mind. And from the place of awareness, we really begin to sense, wow, there's a lot of judgment in this mind of mine. And yet, bare attention notices, oh, this is just the way it is, and we just don't feed the judgments. And once we begin to really be able to be more in contact, we see those more quickly, much sooner, and they don't need to take the authority. And so can you just imagine the freedom from living from a place where there's just a sense of a little less, even this glimpse less, of falling into the trap of judgment or comparing? So it's not superficial. Then the other aspect, which I'm going to be talking about now, and that's one of the last things I'm going to say, is that aspect of confusing concept with reality, right? And that's quite helpful, actually. And I'm going to use... Oh, can you bring me this? Sorry. Thanks, Bartel. You're so essential. See, today... But I'm not so sure it was obvious for everybody. You hear bell, right? So we ring the bell at a very certain and clear time, don't we? Right? The end of the sitting. Isn't that nice? It means, whoa, I can move the end of the sitting. So there's a plenty of interpretation, right? There's meaning, there's all that. But before we start interpreting, I can move, this means the end of the sit, there's sound, right? So the actual experience is just hearing. It's sound, right? So we confuse. We live in thoughts. What does it mean? That we constantly live in the world of interpretation, right? I hear airplane immediately. Do I really hear airplane? No. I hear sound vibration. It was very loud earlier on today. Did you notice? Well, it was just like, whoa. It felt like it went through my body. So there's that experience, right? And then there's the thought. There's nothing wrong with the thought. Airplane. It's the name, right? The concept. But what we do is we conflate the two, right? So we're never really with the actual experience, right? So you, rather than think bird, right? You also hear sound. Sound of bird. And so these are two different experiences. So when we begin to meditate, we really have a sense that the steadiness of awareness allows us to be with the actual experience. And there's so much more life to this. Ah, right now. You hear. So immediately, it's the interpretation, the concept. I hear an airplane. Yeah. Do you hear sound, vibration? So it really requires attention, right? Because immediately we move into thought, interpretation. And it's like that for everything. For everything. We just live in this world of thought, interpreting our life. And we begin to sense a little bit more that there are other aspects maybe in life. The sensory world. So, just as a last example, which is so meaningful, is that when we begin to ask you to feel sensation, okay, so you have knee, and maybe there's sensation in knee, and you call it knee pain because it calls for your attention, meaning there's quite an intensity, maybe, in the knee. Oh no, now I have a knee pain. So that's the thought, the concept, right? It's not the actual experience. What is the actual experience? Well, because I need to use words, I'm going to be using words, right? It may be stabbing or pressure, right? The feeling is the actual sensation. So you begin to really connect and be intimate with that sensation. Not only with the thought about, the story about. So when we live with the story about, we're at a distance. This is not the intimacy of connection. It's fine to have the thought, I have a knee pain, but it's a thought. It's not the feeling. Okay, so you really begin to sense the very clear distinctions of what it means to have mindfulness, which is a synonym for bare attention. So we can be aware of hearing and we can be aware of thinking. And when we are beginning to really recognize a moment for what it is, we are meditating. So there's four steps in a way with this process of mindfulness. Is we recognize, that's the first. There's a real sense that we need to be clear about what is happening when it is happening, right? There's recognition. That's the call, the bare attention. But then mostly what we do is, okay, I recognize, and what happens? I react towards, against, or for, right? This is our normal way, right? I don't want to feel this knee pain. It's painful, right? So I react. So when we begin to be with the process of mindfulness, we notice the reaction, we don't feed the reaction, and we begin to move in the direction of, oh, this is interesting. Stabbing, burning, allowing to feel the actual experience, right? So rather than constantly disconnect, which we do very immediately, normal, totally normal. It's not a problem. We notice, okay, there's not wanting. You totally acknowledge that, and you can begin to also explore what it is that is happening, meaning that you begin to allow to meet. Just want to be aware. It doesn't matter what we are aware of. It can be reactivity, not wanting to feel. That's the momentary experience. It's not, it shouldn't be, the reactivity shouldn't be, I should not be aversive. It's fine to meet that. It's okay. Whatever it is, all experiences have the same value. And then what happens is that we can begin to work with the difficulties. And that's what we'll learn along the way. And then the third step is that we keep interested. Slowly, slowly, there is an interest that comes in, no matter why. Why? Because the awareness, the mindfulness is a little more steady. And because this mindfulness is wholesome, it means it holds wisdom. It doesn't have this judgmental attitude of good, bad, no, not want, want. It just sees for what it is. So it holds you interested. And there's even a sense, it's called joyful interest. Can you believe it? Because there's a freshness. It can stay. It can stay alive. And that's the aliveness. So there's a real interest in what is happening. Well, no matter what is happening, and that's great when it starts happening, even if it's boredom, even if it's tiredness, there's an interest in, oh, what does boredom feel like? Boredom, wow. You're not lost in the boredom, you're noticing what it is about. It's great. That's when we begin to be at the level of the nature of what is happening. Nature of sensation, nature of sound, just sensing, seeing and being in contact with this human life as it shows itself. beautiful. And the outcome of all of this is non-clinging, meaning that slowly, slowly, we begin to allow life rather than grasp at this because I want it to be this way. I'm trying to control. I'm trying to make it happen in my way. We sense that it's not that personal, that the nature of this life has its own rhythm. It has its organic rhythm of manifesting appearances and allowing things to pass. And so we're more in tune, you can say, in accord with life as it shows itself. And this, of course, the result is non-clinging, more freedom. Same thing. Right? And so the present moment is the only place we can learn to be free. It's the only place you can learn to be free because it is the reality. All the rest is kind of a dream. And you don't need to go somewhere else. This is great. You don't need to be somewhere else. You just need to be here and now to welcome. Come home to now, to this moment. And so when you ask yourself, and this is going to be the last thing I'm going to say, is, am I doing it right? Or am I doing it wrong? There is no right or wrong. In this wonderful experience of life manifesting as it is, there is no right and wrong. There is no perfect meditator. And there is no perfect state. Your life is your life, and it's precious as it is. It has its own beauty. Okay, so I think it's enough for tonight. A first day is always difficult. So if you're tired tonight, it's normal. I'll end with a little poem from Lao Tzu. He says, "There is no need to run outside for better seeing, nor to peer from a window. Rather, abide at the center of your being, for the more you leave it, the less you learn. Search your heart and see if he is wise who takes each turn. The way to do is to be." So, inviting you all to be, to live in being. And this is the invitation for these few days of retreat. Thank you.